Hi, this is John Oates, and you're listening to Life Minute. I'm getting ready for my
reunion. After 50 years of being one half of the most iconic group of all time, Hall & Oates, John Oates is spending more quality time reflecting on his own true gift of song. His second full-length release since 2018, Reunion, reflects on life, love, and the afterlife in a bluegrass, folksy, country sound of way that truly represents his intricate guitar playing, beautiful voice, and of course, his amazing lyrical storytelling. This is a Life Minute with John Oates.
Tell us about the show. What are fans going to get when they see you?
They're going to get the unfiltered version of Oates. Oates in his mid-70s, playing music that I really believe in and music that I feel is very authentic and honest to where I am in my life. And lots of new songs and lots of stories telling about how the songs were written, what the inspiration was behind some of the songs. And I do some covers. I do some songs from people that I really like John Prine, Smokey Robinson. I try to give people a kind of an overview of who I am as a musician and the kind of musical life and history that I've had.
How would you describe that history?
Well, you know, I'm old enough to remember music before rock and roll, which is, I think, a unique perspective. My parents played big band music and swing and stuff like that, the music of their teenage generation, of the World War II generation. So growing up being, singing from the time I was old enough to talk, basically, I heard that music. And then when rock and roll started in the early 50s, I was aware that something new had happened. And I was really all in, you know, I just embraced this new thing that was going on. It seems rock and roll's been around for so long now that it seems like it's been there forever, but it actually wasn't, you know. So I started playing guitar at a very super early age, 5, 6 years old. I was taking vocal lessons. I played Chuck Berry and Little Richard and Elvis and, Buddy Holly, the Everly Brothers. That was, you know, kind of where it started. And then as rock and roll evolved, so did I as a musician. I became better at what I was doing, listened to music, listened to the folk revival when it hit in the early 60s and absorbed all this roots music that which really is the foundation for rock and roll. And I learned to see, and I began to really understand that American popular music has this amazing history and continuum that really has built upon itself over the years. I draw upon all those influences, the early days of R&B, you know, I'm very much a fan of the early days of regional American music. You know, and before the great homogenization of the corporate radio stations where, you know, playlists became, 10, 15 songs that rotated every hour. There were all these amazing regional radio stations in Memphis and Nashville and Chicago and Motown and Philly, and all playing their songs from their music community. And I love that. And I kind of, you know, pine for the days when that was that, but you know, those days are long gone. So I really draw from these incredible regional musical styles. And to me, they're all one big happy family, happy musical family.
So you said 5 years old. I don't think I ever knew that. That's when you started playing.
Actually, it's not true. I have a recording of me singing a nursery rhyme when I was four. We went to Coney Island Amusement Park and they had those record booths where you could go and put a dime in or a quarter in or whatever it was, and you could sing a song and out would pop this little record. I actually have it. And then I went back when I was a little bit older, maybe when I was 6 or 7, and I sang All Shook Up, the Elvis song. And I have that too. So I've been recording since I've been 4 years old.
Were your parents supportive of this growing up?
Yeah, they were. They weren't musical, but my mom was a bit of a stage mother, more than a bit. I think she lived vicariously through me. She always wanted me to play all the little kiddie shows. You know, she would take me around and dress me in, like, let's put it this way, I very rarely wear red anymore. She always used to say, Johnny, you look so good in red. And I was like, oh, okay. But, you know, I say it with a lot of love. I make a joke of it. But without her, you know, she really pushed me. And she really did. I think she took a lot of pride in the fact that I had this God-given ability, basically. And I wrote a book, and I don't know if you saw it or not. It's called Change of Season in 17. And one of the lines in the book, which I said early on, was that, you know, I don't really care about being famous because I've always been famous. I was the oldest son in an Italian family. So I was always treated like a king. I was the only one allowed in the kitchen when my Italian grandmother would cook. She wouldn't let anyone else in except me. She always gave me the first meatball. So I was like a little king, you know. And so for me, I was famous on different levels my whole life. You know, everyone always paid attention to me. So when you get that kind of, you know, support, and it builds up a foundation of confidence. And so I've always been like that.
That's amazing. So I've interviewed you 3 times and I don't think I knew that you were Italian. I'm Italian too, 100%.
I
No
can
wonder why
tell.
I
I can tell.
like you.
Well, I'm only 50. My mother's side of family is Italian.
All right, so let's talk about Reunion. It's beautiful.
Yeah, thank you.
Congratulations. What's it about for you?
Well, my dad's 100, and he's getting to the end, you know what I mean? And he's been talking about things, talking about reuniting with mom, who passed away a number of years ago. And when he said that to me, it started resonating with me. And I began to think about my own life, and I began to think about the whole idea of what does reunion really mean? It means reuniting. That's what it means, if you break the word down. And so I realized that what was happening was not only with my dad and the natural progression of his life, you know, toward its ending, but I realized that what I needed to do and what I am doing is reuniting with the essential part of myself, the person who made me who I am long before Hall & Oates, the essential spiritual soul. You know, a good friend of mine, when I started doing some solo shows a few years back, he said to me something that really struck home. He said, "Johnny," he goes, "you were a musician for 15 years before you met Daryl Hall. You were a musician then. You're going to be a musician for the rest of your life, regardless of whether you play Hall and Oates songs or not. That's a 50-year experience that I've had, and I'm so proud of it, and I'm very respectful of the success and the, you know, and the fact that some of the songs will last forever. But that's not only who I am, and now I'm a different person. And so I want to represent myself in the most honest, respectful way for who I am at my age and with my experience. And so that's what the song's really about. There's a line in the song that I think really is the summation of the whole idea. And it's the line in the chorus that says, "The lights at the party burn bright, but I'm leaving early tonight."
The lights at the party burn bright. I'm leaving early tonight.
Same time to move on.
It's not what I thought when I thought it was a love song, but it's a family love song.
Well,
It's
you know what? You can take it in a lot of ways. You can take it in a lot of ways. I think the key is that it's time to know when to go. You know, that can be a metaphor for a lot of things. For my father, it's a going home to, you know, another place. For me, it's going home to the essence of my musical spirit. And I do. I like to go home to my wife. I like to be at home. And so I like to be able to be in charge of my life so that I can arrange my schedule and things so that it works for me. So it's very multi, there's a lot going on in that song.
Take us down, if you would, if we have time for that, for each one. Long Monday.
Gonna be a long Monday. Sitting all alone on a mountain by a river, there's no wind.
Well, I'll tell you what. When I get to heaven, I'm going to tell you what Long Monday's about because John Prine wrote it and he's up there. So I'll have to ask him. But I think I know what he was writing about. He was writing about you know, it's a great song. I got a chance to perform it during a celebration of his life at his birthday just recently. When I was asked to, you know, pick a song, he's got so many amazing songs. And John Prine and I we go way back because he was making his first album when Daryl and I were making our first album in the same studio with the same producer in New York at Atlantic Records. So people don't realize that. A lot of people don't realize that, but we have a lot of in common when it comes to our beginnings of our career. So I've just been a huge fan, and I came up with my own unique arrangement of it. I really liked it, and so I said, "Well, I'll record it." So that's the story with that.
I found love.
Yeah, I found love when I found you.
Well, I found love. I wrote for my wife when we first met back in the early 90s. And I actually recorded that song in 2007 when I first was really being a part of the new Americana movement in Nashville. I had met Sam Bush, Jerry Douglas, and Bela Fleck, three guys who are just, as far as I'm concerned, at the top of their game as musicians and musicianship. And I wanted to record with authentic bluegrass players, and I wanted that experience. And I brought them into the studio, and we didn't know each other very well at the time, but we've since become very good friends. They just played so beautifully on that. And it was on an album, was actually pre-released on an album called 1,000 Miles of Life. I just felt I needed to say it again. So what I did was I re-recorded the vocals, I re-recorded my guitar part, but I kept Sam, Jerry, and Bela on the track, just the way it was back in 2007. I just thought it was a song that really was overlooked and no one really heard it. So I wanted to give people a chance to hear it again.
This field is mine.
So you can build and burn and borrow and put up your posted sign. But this field is mine.
That's a song that was inspired by my wife. My wife comes from a farming family in Illinois, and her parents still have their family farm, which they've had for generations, and they are very passionate about it. And the area where they're living, south of Chicago, is being overrun by suburbs and housing developments and things, and many farmers in the area have been selling their land, and they just refuse to sell. And I just thought it was so noble, you know, to really have that kind of respect for the land. And I thought about owning property, you know, if you own a house, or maybe you have some property, but the thing is, you really don't, you know, you can say you own it, but you actually don't. You're just a caretaker for a while, because it's going to be there when you're gone. So I thought, that's an interesting idea. And that's what that song's about.
All I ask of you.
This is all I'll ask of you.
That's me projecting into the future what I want people to say when I'm dead.
What do you want people to say when you're dead?
Just listen to lyrics.
Dance hall girls.
Them dance hall girls, they don't treat you kind.
Oh, dance hall girls, that's a great song. I didn't write that song. I wish I would have. I was in Europe. I went to Europe right after I graduated from college in 1970, and I spent four months busking around Europe with a backpack and a guitar. I had gotten to Amsterdam. I had been all over Western Europe in every country, and I was getting tired and running out of money, and I went to a record shop in Amsterdam. In those days, you could take an album or a vinyl, and you could go into a little booth, put it on, put some headphones on, and actually listen to the music before you bought it. And I started listening to, I guess I was homesick. I started listening to all this really American music, bluegrass music and blues. And then I found this obscure record by a group from Canada called Fraser and DeBolt. I'd never heard of them. I put it on and I heard that song, and I almost started crying. Maybe I did start crying. And I just knew I had to go home. That song brought me back, and I went back to America. Actually, I played it for Daryl, and Daryl and I were just, we weren't really working together. We were just hanging out. And we both really liked that song, and I said, one day I'm going to record that. So I did.
When Carolina comes home again.
When Carolina comes home.
That's a song I wrote with my very good friend, the great Jim Lauderdale, an amazing Nashville singer-songwriter, an amazing person. He became one of my best friends in Nashville. I met him at the Telluride Bluegrass Festival. He just made me laugh. He's a very funny guy and very interesting guy. And he and I really bonded, and we wrote many songs together. And that's one of my favorites. It's a very interesting folk style of guitar playing that I do on that song. It's very unique. It's a Carter family strum, which goes back to Maybelle Carter, one of the first of the folkies back in the early, late 1920s of the Carter family. And Jim is from North Carolina. So his kind of influential idea about Carolina, and we just made it up in the middle of the night.
And the coffee house version of Reunion.
I'm making ready for my reunion.
Yeah, we wanted to do more, a little bit more of an acoustic stripped down version, because the song itself dictates how you're going to record it and what type of instrumentation you're going to use. And I knew that the song of Reunion, the idea of it was so powerful. I wanted to have a full blown production. So after having that really big production, I wanted to now take it down to give people an alternative version that was a little bit more intimate.
At any time, live.
So anytime you say, warm it back again, that's the time I'll come back home to you.
Oh, anytime live. Well, I recorded that with my old band, the Nashville band, the Good Road Band. That was recorded in a hotel room in Kansas City during a thing called the Folk Alliance, which is a gathering of folkies, basically. We went in there, and everyone was a little ripply-pipply that night. And it was like we were so loose and we didn't care about anything. And we just started playing. And you may not notice this, but the intro to the song that Guthrie Trapp does, he just did it spontaneously, and it's actually in the wrong key. The band kicked in the right key, and it's just this weird magical moment that you could never ever plan for. So it's totally live. It was not, you know, it's actually, like I said, in a hotel room in Kansas City.
And then Arkansas, live from Station Inn. Well, that old man with a flow. Yes, a snow
white cotton fields of Arkansas. Yeah, well, I love the Station Inn. And in fact, interestingly enough, I just got asked to play there again on September 21st at the end of the Americana Music Conference. So I'm going to be playing there again. It's one of my favorite places to play in Nashville. It's awesome. I played there so many times. And that was just a night when I had the full band. And that was a 7-piece band with Sam Bush and Russ Paul and Guthrie Trapp and Josh Day and Steve Mackey and Nat Smith on cello, who's still playing with me. This incredible band I called the Good Road Band. It was one of those great nights at the Station Inn. And Arkansas is the title track to an album I released in 18 called Arkansas. And I wanted people to hear that version of that band because it was so amazing.
And the band you're touring with now, how many are you?
It's 4-piece, including myself. So it's really a trio plus me. My old friend, John Michel from Aspen, Colorado, who I've been playing with since the 90s. Nat Smith on cello, who I've been playing with for about 10 years now. And a brand new guy named Sam Wilson, who was playing with Mary Chapin Carpenter. I heard him playing at Telluride Bluegrass Festival this past summer, and I loved his playing, and I reached out to him, and he joined. He plays electric guitar and pedal steel. It's a kind of an acoustic, very small acoustic ensemble.
You did something with Jim Croce's son recently?
Yeah, Reunion. I co-wrote Reunion with him. We met at the John Prine event at Ryman when I was doing Long Monday. We were put in the same dressing room. They stuck us in the same dressing room, and he and I just hit it off. And, you know, obviously he's got some pretty good songwriting DNA in his background. When I had the idea for Reunion, we were going to do a writing session, and I didn't know what we were going to do. But after we hung out for a little bit, I got the sense that he would get it. And so I told him, I had a lot of the chorus already written, kind of sang that, especially that line about lights at the party burn bright, but I'm leaving early tonight. I'm making ready for my reunion. I told him the whole story of my dad and blah, blah, blah. And he got it. That's the mark of a great songwriter who can take an idea and really understand, you know, and bring something of himself to it. And in fact, interestingly enough, he just recorded his version of it. And he's going to put it out on his album, which is not going to come out until next year. And his version is completely different. It's much more of a gospel piano song, which is really cool that he did a completely different version.
That's so beautiful because, you know, Jim Croce is one of those guys. Oh, yeah. That makes a lot of sense that you guys are together. What inspires you lately?
I'm really enjoying playing the show. I'm really playing, and because it's a new group of, you know, I mean, other than John Michel, who I've been playing with for a long time, I love putting the arrangements together. I love thinking about who's playing what and how they're playing, the sonic spaces that they're occupying, you know, which is dictated by not only the player themselves, but the instrument that they're playing on, and how to make the most of this very intimate acoustic ensemble. I work on it every day. I think about it, and then we go into the sound check, and we talk about who's going to do what and how they're going to do it. So every night, it just keeps getting better and better and better. And I really like that.
That's so cool. How do you keep your voice in tune?
Well, I shouldn't be talking to you on a show day. I know how to sing. I try to use my throat in a certain kind of way. I also adapt the vocals on these songs to how I'm feeling. Sometimes I'm feeling really strong and I'll really push hard. Other times I'm not and I'll kind of stroke it a little bit, but I have ways of adapting the melodies and singing in different registers. So I've been singing my whole life, so I know how to do it.
You sure do. How do you take care of yourself when you're on the road?
Yeah, well, that's always a challenge. Try not to get sick. You know, I'm very conscientious about, you know, washing my hands and using wet wipes and all that kind of stuff. I go into a hotel room, I wipe everything down with wet wipes. I try to be really careful. If I go to a restaurant, I bring wet wipes with me and wipe the forks and knives and the glasses.
First time I interviewed you, you told me that. You said you wiped everything down and it was right before COVID. I was like, oh, look at that.
Well, that's even more so. Yeah, no, and I just try to be careful. You know, I got sick on the last tour I did in November, last November. I got COVID and had to cancel a show. So it happens, you know, it's kind of the world we live in. And when you're traveling around on planes and, you know, in public places and eating in restaurants, you know, you kind of open yourself up for that possibility. So you just have to be careful.
What's your favorite comfort food?
The food I can't eat, ice cream. I can't eat ice cream anymore. I wish I could. I love ice cream. It's not good for my throat. It's not good for me in general. But I love Italian food. If I had to, I think Italian food is the only food in the world where you could eat it for the rest of your life and never repeat a dish.
What's something you always bring with you when you travel?
My own pillow. I bring an air pillow that I blow up because I don't want to put my face in a hotel pillow because who knows what has been going on in that pillow with people and things. So yeah. And that, you know what, since I started doing that a few years ago, and I don't get as sick now because I never put my face in a pillow that other people have breathed into.
What's something that you want to do that you haven't done yet?
Not much. I want to be the best that I can be. That's what I want. I want to be the best that I can be while I still have the physical and mental ability to do it. I can still sing. I can still play. I can still travel. I want to enjoy that as much as I can, because at some point it's going to end. It's a reality, and I don't dwell on it, but it's real. So I want to just live life to the fullest while I can.
You're an international treasure that just keeps getting better and better.
Would you call my wife and tell her that? Let her know.
I think she knows. How do you keep it going and keep it fresh? Because it does. Everything you do always sounds fresh and beautiful and more heartfelt.
I'm one of the lucky ones. I know that, you know, look, everyone is going to have to work in their life some way, shape, or form, right? Unless you're, you know, a trust fund kid or something like that. But, you know, my philosophy is that if your life's work is your life's passion, then you've won. You've won the game of life, you know, so to speak. And I did. You know, I've been a musician my whole life. I've never had another job. Very fortunate. I don't want to take that for, I never take it for granted. And I want it to be, if I have to be an example of something, I want to be an example of someone who is respectful of the blessings and the gifts that I've been given.
That's a gift to us too. Thank you for your many gifts. Keep on giving them to us, please.
All right.
Thank you so much. You're awesome.
Oh, that was a nice interview. It was really nice. Yeah. Well, come and see a show if you can.
I will. Okay. Love to.
All right.
Good luck. Bye. Stay well. Bye.
Thank you.
To see more of this interview, visit our website, lifeminute.tv. And don't forget to subscribe to our podcast, Life Minute TV.